Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Narratries Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The War on Warriors: Uncovering the Cultural Chaos Threatening Our Military is a 2004 political nonfiction book by Pete Hegseth, a U.S. Army veteran, former National Guard officer, and public commentator. The book examines the contemporary American military through a sharply critical cultural and institutional lens. Hegseth argues that the armed forces have moved away from a traditional emphasis on combat effectiveness, merit, discipline, and constitutional duty, and toward what he sees as ideological conformity, bureaucratic risk avoidance, and social engineering. Its purpose is not to provide a detached academic history of military policy, but to make a polemical case for reforming the Pentagon and restoring a warrior-centered institutional culture. The book draws on Hegseth's military experience, recent controversies over diversity and extremism policies, and broader conservative critiques of American institutions. It is best understood as a politically charged argument about military readiness, leadership accountability, and the cultural meaning of service. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, meritocracy as the central measure of military legitimacy. A major premise of the War on Warriors is that the military's moral and practical legitimacy depends on meritocracy. Hegseth presents the armed forces as one of the few American institutions where performance, discipline, physical readiness, and mission competence should outweigh background, identity, credentials, or political fashion. In his argument, combat units cannot operate effectively if promotion, selection, or training standards are shaped by symbolic inclusion rather than battlefield usefulness. This is not only a cultural claim, but a functional one. War punishes weak incentives more severely than civilian institutions do. Hegseth's critique is aimed at policies he believes dilute uniform standards or introduce identity-based expectations into decisions that should be tied to capability. Whether readers accept his conclusions or not, the book's reasoning is clear: a military exists to deter enemies and win conflicts. So any internal policy must be judged by its effect on lethality, cohesion, and readiness. The emphasis on meritocracy gives the book its organizing standard. It allows Hegseth to connect debates over gender standards, diversity initiatives, officer promotion, and training priorities into one broader claim about institutional drift. Secondly, the critique of ideological capture inside the Pentagon. Hegseth argues that the military has become vulnerable to the same cultural and ideological pressures that have reshaped universities, corporations, and other public institutions. In his account, concepts associated with diversity, equity, inclusion, critical race theory, pronoun rules, and counter-extremism efforts have redirected attention away from warfighting. The book does not treat these developments as isolated administrative choices. It frames them as evidence of a deeper struggle over the military's identity. Hegseth contends that when soldiers are encouraged to view one another primarily through identity categories, the shared identity of service member, oath taker, and team member is weakened. His concern is that ideological language can create suspicion inside units that require trust under stress. The book's argument is especially focused on how elite civilian culture enters military institutions through training programs, academy governance, human resources rules, and senior leadership incentives. This is one of the book's most controversial dimensions because critics may see diversity policies as compatible with readiness or necessary for recruiting. Hegseth's contribution is to force the question of institutional priority, whether cultural representation or combat effectiveness should govern military reform when the two are perceived to conflict. Thirdly, senior leadership, careerism, and the problem of accountability. The War on Warriors directs much of its criticism not at ordinary soldiers, but at the senior officer and civilian leadership class. Hegseth argues that many high-ranking officials have become too cautious, politically adaptive, and insulated from the consequences of failure. He portrays a system in which generals and Pentagon officials can preside over strategic mistakes, avoid personal accountability, and later move into defense contracting, media commentary, or other prestigious roles. This critique connects military culture to institutional incentives. If promotion rewards bureaucratic conformity more than candor, risk-taking, or combat realism, then leaders may become skilled at protecting careers rather than preparing troops. Hegseth's argument also echoes long-standing concerns about the military-industrial complex, although he frames them through contemporary culture war disputes. His proposed remedies include stricter standards for promotion, greater willingness to remove ineffective leaders, and limits on the revolving door between senior military office and defense industry employment. The significance of this topic is that it broadens the book beyond complaints about training language or social policy. Hegseth is making a structural claim: cultural decline persists because senior leaders have incentives to accept it, enforce it, or remain silent about it. Fourthly, warrior ethos. masculinity, and the meaning of combat readiness, Hegseth's book repeatedly returns to the idea of a warrior ethos, a disciplined willingness to endure hardship. Use force decisively, and subordinate the self to mission and comrades. He argues that modern military culture has become uncomfortable with the traits historically associated with close combat, including aggression, toughness, hierarchy, and masculine forms of bonding. In his view, these traits can be misused, but they cannot be eliminated without weakening the fighting force. The book therefore distinguishes between destructive misconduct and properly directed martial character. This is a central reason Hegseth criticizes what he sees as therapeutic or managerial language in military settings. He believes that soldiers are not merely employees in uniform. They are trained for violence under lawful command, and that requires a culture different from civilian workplaces. The point is not simply nostalgia for earlier wars. It is a claim about preparation troops who may face fear, injury, moral ambiguity, and lethal danger need institutions that cultivate resilience rather than comfort. This aspect of the book will appeal to readers who see combat effectiveness as inseparable from character formation, while raising questions for those who believe modern warfare demands a broader range of technical and cognitive skills. Lastly, Constitutional Oath as the book's proposed source of unity. Beneath the book's cultural criticism is a recurring appeal to the Constitutional Oath. Hegseth argues that the armed forces should be united by loyalty to the Constitution rather than to partisan leaders, bureaucratic fashions, racial categories, or elite institutional norms. This gives the book a civic framework that is broader than its disputes over diversity policy or officer leadership. The oath functions as his answer to fragmentation. Soldiers from different regions, classes, and backgrounds can serve together because they are bound by a common legal and moral commitment. In this view, military neutrality is not achieved by avoiding all values, but by grounding service in a specific constitutional order. Hegseth also uses this idea to criticize leaders he believes have allowed political agendas to influence training, discipline, and institutional messaging. The practical implication is that military education should reinforce duty, lawful command, national defense, and constitutional limits rather than fashionable ideological doctrines. This theme matters because it shows how the book tries to convert a culture war critique into a theory of institutional repair. The proposed solution is not simply to remove disliked policies, but to re-anchor military identity in an oath-based understanding of service. In conclusion, The War on Warriors is most relevant for readers interested in military culture, civil-military relations, conservative political criticism, and debates over readiness in the USS Armed Forces. Veterans, active duty personnel, policymakers, military families, Bajing, and citizens concerned with defense policy will find it useful as a clear statement of one influential critique of the modern Pentagon. Its practical benefit is that it organizes scattered controversies over diversity training, promotion standards, gender policy, extremism reviews, bureaucracy, and defense leadership into a single argument about mission priority. Intellectually, the book helps readers understand why many conservatives view military reform as inseparable from broader cultural conflict. It stands out from more technical defense books because it is less focused on weapons systems, budgets, grand strategy, or geopolitical forecasting, and more focused on the moral culture of the force. Compared with memoirs by veterans, it is also less personal narrative and more institutional indictment. Its limitations are tied to its strengths. The polemical style may feel one-sided to readers who want empirical balance or a fuller account of how diversity, technology, and modern recruitment challenges interact. Still, as a forceful intervention in contemporary military debate, it is distinctive because it treats culture not as a secondary personnel issue, but as a direct condition of battlefield effectiveness and national security. If you would like to support Pete Hegseth, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.